The Gilgo Beach serial killing and suspect Rex Heuermann has brought the attention of many to serial killings in America, which brings a question to mind. How many serial killers do you think have committed their horrors in America? Now, more than that, according to a study from the University of Michigan, over 3,600. So that means you probably only know about the minority of these evil people. My next guest is well aware of the many rather than the few. His studies and efforts have assisted the FBI, New Jersey Senate Task Force, who rewrote Megan's Law, many areas of law and law enforcement in between. He's also a professor of criminal justice at John Jay College. Professor Louis Schlesinger, how are you today, Professor?
Good. How are you?
Great to have you here to talk about, it's a topic that draws people in, I guess, for the sensational, but I think it really displays the elements of the human characteristics that many of us at least hope we're not capable of. I do want to mention John Jay College on the web, jayjj.cuny.edu. We have a link at our page to learn more about the educational opportunities at John Jay College. How is a serial killer, I guess, medically defined, I guess would be the phrase?
Well, serial killer is really a generic term. It means literally killing in a series. Now, you have to differentiate serial sexual murder, the type of serial killer that we know most about and that you hear most about. The alleged Gilgo Beach killer would fall in that category, as would Ted Bundy, BTK, the Boston Strangler, and so on. There are other types of individuals who kill in a series. For example, Nurse Cullen, a New Jersey, Pennsylvania case, who killed his patients. There's another famous New Jersey case, contract killer, Richard Kuklinski, the Iceman, one of my cases from about 30 years ago. And then there's the psychotic individual, extremely rare, who kills as a result of hallucinations or delusions, God tells you to kill, and so on. So generally when we speak, we have to differentiate. We're talking about serial sexual murder, and that's basically what that is. It's killing because the killing itself is sexually arousing. Most people can understand murder, but it's very hard for a lot of people to understand sexual murder. The best way to understand serial sexual murder is killing alone is not psychosexually sufficient, so the offender has to go above and beyond killing to gratify himself sexually, leaving her body posed, foreign object insertions, and this sort of thing.
So versus the serial killer, or maybe even we can bring in the thrill killers, I think back to the New Jersey pizza murders, those two examples are there for the kill, where the sexual serial killer is there for the domination leading up to the kill.
Yeah, that's right. And the domination and control and sexual arousal during the killing itself. The best way to understand this serial sexual murder is an abnormal sexual arousal pattern where there's a fusion of sex and aggression so that the aggressive act itself is eroticized. It's stimulating.
I have to point out, too, this case is a testimonial to law enforcement because these were four bodies that were discovered 13 years ago, just about 13 years ago now, and law enforcement kept this case active to varying degrees.
Let me just make a point about that. That's a very good point, and it assures us again and again that law enforcement will never give up on a case, whether it's 10, 20, 30 years go by, you think it's cold as could possibly be, you wake up one day and there's an arrest. Now, a couple years ago, there was the Golden State serial killer out in California. The murders occurred in the 1970s. And I said publicly on several media shows, I said, I don't think they're ever going to get this guy because I thought even he'd be dead. He'd be in his mid-70s now. You wake up one day and they made an arrest. Same with this case as well. Law enforcement will never give up.
With the suspect, I always hesitate using names because, in part, that's what they want to. That adds to their effort of domination or recognition, whatever the case may be. But in this case with the suspect, does he live up to the textbook example of a sexual serial killer, or does he not, and that's why he was able to elude attention for this amount of time?
Okay, that's another very good question. Let me answer your question this way. You should not use Hannibal Lecter as the model of serial sexual murder. The American people want their serial killers to be evil geniuses with IQs of 160, who speak five languages, including Aramaic, who are connoisseurs of fine wine, and nothing could be further from the truth. The vast majority of these folks are unemployed, unskilled workers, semi-skilled workers, and so on. The individuals who have gone to college, such as Ted Bundy, who attended law school, or Dennis Rader, BTK, who graduated with a criminal justice degree, and the alleged Guy Hurman, who was an architect, those are outliers. That's very, very rare. So that's that.
We're talking with Professor Lewis Schlesinger, who is a professor of criminal justice at John Jay College, jjjjay.suny.edu. We have the link at our homepage. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. Taking that a step further, Professor, I've talked for years now about domestic violence on the show, and a domestic abuser appears one way outside the home, and they're dark, different way in the home with the abused, to the point where you can say, you know, I think Sid's beating Sarah around. Oh, come on, Sid's a great guy. He would never do something like that. Is a sexual serial killer also that twin personality, public versus private?
Well, that's for sure, and particularly the alleged Gilgo Beach killer as well. There was a brief interview he gave. It's on YouTube, I think. I saw it on that, where he was interviewed about his architectural business. And if you watch that, it's about 20 minutes long. What do you see? You see a person well-groomed, articulate, bright. The background of his office is very well put together. His wedding band is right out there for everybody to see. You look at that, he looks completely normal. You see, many people incorrectly believe that they can determine, a danger. And for example, the layman's conception of a serial sexual murderer is somebody who's dirty with pus coming out of their eye and no teeth. And that's just not true at all. Hurman, for example, looked like everybody else. Same with Ted Bundy. Same with Dennis Rader. And so you're correct. Because they don't appear that abnormal, they just blend into society. Let me say one other thing about serial sexual murderers, which shock a lot of people. Half of them don't have an arrest record.
Right.
And I don't think Hurman had an arrest record as well.
Also, too, with the element of strangulation, because that's obviously up close personal, is a life where they don't have a normal close personal relationship or relationships, does that become a trigger for them to do what they do?
Well, correct. The main way serial sexual murderers kill is by either ligature strangulation or manual strangulation, so they control death. Why? Because sadism is certainly inflicting pain upon someone else, but more basic than inflicting pain on someone else is the sadist assures himself that he is in complete control. And so what they often do is will strangle the victim and then release pressure as she's about to die so she's aware of his control over her and then strangle her again. It increases the victim's agony and at the same time increases his sexual gratification.
I don't know if this is coming out of left field at you or not, but if he was not caught, would Robert Chambers have become a serial sexual killer?
Impossible to know from a distance. Impossible to know from a distance. Also, keep in mind as well, murder is the least common crime. Sexual murder is less than 1% of all murders. Serial sexual murder is a fraction of that 1%, so it's extremely rare. Now, the Robert Chambers case, that was about 30 years ago. I don't remember all the details, but that may have been just a non-serial sexual murder. I just can't remember all the specifics of that case. Could a non-serial sexual murderer kill again in that way? It is entirely possible. What happens in these cases is the individual, let me explain it this way. Somebody doesn't wake up one day and say, I think I'm going to go out and kill five women. That's a good idea. No. It begins 10, 15, 20 years earlier in the offender's mind, in his fantasies, and then he strikes out. If you do it spontaneously, like many non-serial sexual murderers, you're apt to get caught quickly. Why? Because you're not forensically aware. You do it impulsively. There may be witnesses around. You may not be able to control the situation, and so on. But if you're forensically aware, then you can avoid law enforcement because you're planning your crimes, elude law enforcement, and rack up a high number of victims. And those individuals who, without a lot of overt psychopathology, meaning without a lot of overt mental illness, like Huerman, for example, or Bundy or BTK, they are forensically aware and they plan their attacks. There's a very interesting example in the Huerman case. I gave a TV interview on this case about a week ago, and they played a clip of a neighbor of Huerman who was, I think he was a fireman. And what he said is Huerman was staring at his wife sunbathing, and it was becoming very, very disturbing to him and his wife as well. So he spoke to Huerman and told him to cut it out. Now, the question arises is why didn't this guy, Huerman, who was obviously fixated on his wife, abduct her and kill her? And the answer is it's too high risk for him to get apprehended. He's way too smart for something like that. You abduct your neighbor who the husband knew you were fixated on, you're immediately going to be the suspect. So who were his victims? They're sex workers. Sex workers are very often targeted by serial sexual murderers. Why? The hardest thing for a sexual murderer to do is the abduction. How do you get a woman to go with you? It's not so simple. That problem is eliminated with sex workers because part of the job description is to go with a stranger, take your clothes off, have sex, and so on. Plus, their identity remains elusive. You could be a victim in New York, but that doesn't mean you came from New York. You could come from Pennsylvania, from California, and so on. And a lot of people don't know their real name on the street. They don't give their real name. And so that's what you find in so many of these cases.
I have a feeling, too, this is going to be a case that will be very educational to law enforcement, from the FBI to local police, for what we are going to learn through this trial.
Without a doubt. But it's interesting you should mention what we should learn about these cases. I don't know if you mentioned or not, but I have a major research project with the FBI Behavioral Analysis Unit down at Quantico for the past 20 years. And we've published a number of articles from a scientific perspective on serial sexual murder. But this is something interesting that I think that almost nobody understands. If you looked at popularized mental disorders like bipolar disorder, PTSD, eating disorders that are in the media all the time, what in the past 20 years, the articles in peer-reviewed scientific journals for those disorders that are popularized, for example, bipolar disorder, 61,000, PTSD, 57,000, eating disorder, 72,000. If you look at popularized crimes that we talk about a lot in the media, sex offenses, 39,000 articles, stalking, close to 1,000 articles, do you know how many articles have been published in peer-reviewed scientific journals on serial sexual murder in the past 20 years? Do you have any idea?
I'm betting it's a low number.
21.
Oof.
21.
I didn't think that low.
Isn't that amazing? And so what you find is a lot of people are pontificating about this who know very little about it, and they're getting all their information from Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal Lecter and this sort of thing. Let me give you, I think you'll find it interesting, a few research findings that we did, myself and my colleagues at the FBI. We did a study on ritual and signature in serial sexual homicide. It's a published article, so if you put that in your search bar, ritual and signature in serial sexual homicide, it should come up. It was published in the Journal of the American Academy of Psychiatry and Law. And we looked at the ritualistic behavior that these offenders commit at crime scenes, meaning above and beyond what's necessary to kill the person, posing the victim, and so on. Let me give you just one finding that shocked us that we didn't understand, we didn't expect. If you look at a series of cases, let's say a guy kills five women. In those five cases, four women, the bodies will be dumped naked and just dumped somewhere. But the fifth body, one out of those five victims will have her breasts cut off, her eyes cut out, something shoved in her. Looks very, very different at the crime scene. You ask an experienced homicide detective with 30 years' experience, almost all of them are going to say, that's a different guy. Look, four of them were dumped, and one cut her breasts off, shoved something in her, has to be a different person. That's not true. We found in 70% of the cases, they do something unique with one victim that they didn't do with others in their series. You have to do the research to understand this because you can't use your common sense. You have to do the research. And then we ask the question, well, where in the series does the experimentation, that's what we called it, occur? In the beginning of the series, the middle of the series, or the end? We thought it would be at the end, after the person gets more experience, more comfort in killing. Incorrect. One-third experiment in the beginning of the series, one-third in the middle, and one-third at the end. We did another study. It was titled Rapid Sequence Serial Sexual Homicides. If you put that in your search bar, the article will come up. And, you know, we know from Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs that serial killers kill, and then they deliberate for an extended period of time, 6 months, a year, so on, to, elude law enforcement, and then they strike again. Well, we looked at the temporal patterns between killings, which is very easy to do. When what is the date of the murder? We found that about half of them do kill with more than 2 weeks between victims. But half of our offenders, half of serial sexual murderers, kill in rapid sequence fashion. There's a group that kill in a spree-like fashion with more than one victim in the same day at different times in different locations. And then there's a group that kill in rapid sequence clusters. They'll kill one and two people, and then there's a period of time in between, and they'll kill three and four, and then there's a period of time and go on. And I'll just mention the last study that we did is titled Foreign Object Insertions in Sexual Homicide. And we looked at what are they inserting. That, you know, and if you look at some of these crime scene photos, the majority of them, the photos you look at with insertions, it'll be like a baseball bat shoved up a woman or a pole or a stick or some sort of phallic-like thing. We found that shocked all of us. 60%, over 60% of the objects inserted were discovered by the medical examiner at autopsy. It was not visible at the crime scene. And it wasn't just phallic-like objects. For example, some we found shoved up, inserted, shirts, socks, underwear, Ovaltine mix, ketchup, a cloth rag, a chair leg, baby wipes, cigarettes, and so on. So you can see, you really have to do the research to understand this. You can't go by watching Hannibal Lecter on TV and use that as a model for understanding serial killers. It may make a good movie, but it's just not reality. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to look at this from a scientific perspective, not just speculation and pontificating.
And what we've done, too, on our website is we're directly linked to Professor Schlesinger's page at the John Jay College website, so you can, because he laid a lot in your ears, I know, but it's all listed as well on his John Jay College page.
I'll just say one other thing. You might want to take a look at my book, 2021 book, Sexual Murder, Catathymic and Compulsive Homicides. It's 95% New Jersey cases.
Which you'll see that as well on our Amazon spot on the homepage because, again, information is key in understanding for law enforcement. And if you're drawn to a case like the Gilgo Beach serial killing for the sensationalistic aspect, there's a science behind everything, the psychology behind everything. And when you look at the professor's work, again, we have the link to his direct page at John Jay College's website. You can reference, cross-reference, and go further from what he has discussed here and hopefully gain a serious understanding rather than understanding the sensational side of these tragic and horrible stories that take place way too often. I gave you the number earlier. In America, over 3,600 serial killers of all sorts. jjjjay.cuny.edu. We have all the links, all the information on our homepage because Professor Schlesinger, you're more than a teacher. You're an educator, and there's a big difference between the two. You help us understand important facts and science, and thank you so much for doing that, for being here today.
Thank you.